It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. And as we were just talking before we started recording, we have an amazing tendency to find news happening just as we begin to record. So we are going to start with that news because it's probably one thing that a lot of people are talking about right now. Hunter Pence is going on the disabled list. First of all, no change in what you do with Pence. Obviously, he's a guy that you hold. You're not going to drop him until and unless we have an absolute he's done for the year kind of situation.
Yeah, totally agree. He had been hitting really well this year, and you know, I've been a big contributor. So yeah, you have to hold him.
The question then is who gets the playing time, who starts playing more, who becomes a bigger factor. Is there anybody you are picking up or have your eye on in the absence of Hunter Pence?
Yes, I just was looking at it quickly, and kind of depending on league size, I think a Pence owner can pull another Giants outfielder to fill their needs. So there's, in really shallow leagues, Denard Span's actually on waivers in some 10-team and leagues. He's on waivers. And then the deeper mixed leagues, I've always been a bit of a Gregor Blanco guy. I just kind of like him. Decent batting average. He'll steal a few bases. I know that he doesn't do exactly what Pence does, but I feel like overall, like, he's not a bad replacement if you're in a deep mixed league. And then I wouldn't mind Jarrett Parker in an NL-only league. I don't have really high hopes for Parker, but he will probably hit a couple home runs this month.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I'm with you on just sort of liking Blanco. He hit 291 last year. He's hitting 280 this year. As you note, with playing time, he'll get you a few steals. I mean, I think part of the question, and again, this is something I think we talked about last week, is it starts becoming a question of what you need and what about Pence's production do you need to replace, because he's hitting 298. He's also got seven homers, 36 RBI, and where are you kind of going to miss him as far as what you're looking to replace? You're not going to replace all of that right away. Again, he's having a really nice year. So it's what do you most need to replace? What do you need to sort of make sure you don't lose out on while he's out?
Yeah, for sure. And, I mean, while Pence has been really productive, it's not like he's been carrying his fantasy team in any one category. So it's not like he's going to get hurt here. Let's say he misses a month or something, and a fantasy owner is going to say, my power numbers can't live without this guy who has seven homers. You know, like, you could replace him with a power hitter, or you could replace him with a high average guy, or this could be an excuse for a Pence owner to say, I'm going to put a base stealer into my lineup for a month while he's out and try to, get a few steals, and I'll live without the homers. But yeah, you're right. We're hitting that point of the year where owners will have to look at their standings if they own Pence and say, where do I want to go with replacing him?
Yeah. Another guy making a lot of news and helping a lot of people with some nice end of May, beginning of June pushes is Mookie Betts. As we discussed back over the offseason in the spring, we were both very high on him. I have him in our MLB.com office league, which I'm very happy about. How high do you rate him right now? Look, I know it's five home runs in two games. It's not going to come anywhere close to continuing that. But you look at now the total picture, and this is kind of the guy, save for the 40 home run pace, that we thought we were talking about, a guy who's going to come into some power, a guy who's got some speed, who hits for a decent average, guy who helps you in a lot of different ways. How high does he rank among outfielders for you right now?
Well, I think outfielders, he's probably top three. I think overall hitters, he's top 10. I don't know if I'm top five on him yet, but I could see, it depends what he does, obviously, from here on out, but I can't rule it out for next year. Just the spot for him is just so outstanding, like leadoff hitter on that great Red Sox lineup that will probably be really good at even going forward, like next season. If he can settle in as a high 20s home run guy and a high 20s steal guy, like a 25-25 or 30-30 kind of guy, which there aren't very many of nowadays, and then scoring 100 runs consistently, decent batting average, and driving in a lot of runs even though he's a leadoff hitter, he's not Trout Harper category for me yet, but I don't know. Like, I could compare him to Nolan Arenado and Machado and Altuve and some of those players. Do you think that's kind of where he fits in?
Yeah, I think Machado is kind of an interesting parallel in that kind of, Betts is on pace for about 20 steals. in that we sort of wonder exactly how much power is there, but if there turns out to be big-time power, you won't be shocked, but you're not counting on that the way you are from somebody like Arenado. In some ways they're not similar players, but I think as far as kind of a framework to think of him in, I don't think that's a bad frame to put him in as you're sort of deciding, like, the floor is really high, and we don't know how high the ceiling is, but it could be just stupid high.
Yeah, for sure. And, I mean, Machado's not running this year. And yeah. If I was going to have a knock on Machado, it would be that really for most of his career he hasn't stolen bases. He stole bases last season, and we thought, you know, okay, well, now this is a thing that he clearly can do and is going to do. But this year he's gone back to not really running. So I kind of feel safer already looking way ahead to 2017. Like, I think I feel safer that Betts will be both hitting home runs and stealing bases maybe than Machado, because we just aren't sure what he's going to do in that category.
No, that's definitely true. Where are you with Ryan Braun, who a couple of years ago was an automatic, was one of the top, just simply top hitters in the game? Much more of a question now, where are you with him right now?
Yeah, he's playing so well. Like, when he is playing, he's just a really interesting guy in the sense, I think there was a game a few days ago where he had missed a few days, came back and played, I think stole two bases, and then missed the game the next day. Like, when he stole the two bases, I thought, okay, well, now he's back. I mean, if you're stealing bases, you're feeling good, you're back. And then, again, the next day he was off. So he's been really frustrating. I feel like if I own Braun, and I do own him in one league, I think you have to hold on him because I just don't think you'll get enough for him on the trade market. If someone wants to pay you full price for Ryan Braun and treat him as, like, a top 40 hitter, then I would trade him probably to get rid of the risk. But if you're not going to get that, I think maybe he's a risk worth taking. And I'm hoping he just hits a healthy stretch somewhere along the way. Matthew, what would you say, like, are the odds that he ends up on the disabled list this season?
I mean, it's hard to say, but, you know, I think if one thing about it is it seems even more than normal that it's very much in the Brewers' interest to be smart with him, not to push him. This is a guy that you'd have to think they'd love to trade and get a big haul for. And also, this is not a team that's in contention. So there's really no reason to push him on a day when you're not sure. There's really no reason to say, well, I feel 75%, but I'm going to grind it out because we need this game. You know, there's some motivation there not to do that. And so you wonder, does that increase his chances of staying off the DL if they're going to be more aggressive about protecting him, more aggressive about making sure that he gets the rest he needs? Then maybe you're just talking about a 130-game player, but you're talking about a 130-game player where that's five times a week instead of 3 weeks on or 4 weeks on and 2 weeks off.
Yeah, and I mean, I understand, like, the way he's been the last couple of weeks, it's more like two or three games a week, and that can't continue for him to help fantasy owners. But he's been playing so well when he's been healthy, and, you know, he has been a really popular name in trade talks. And I wondered if the Brewers would put him on the disabled list for a couple of weeks just to get him, you know, hopefully back as close as they can to 100% and then hope that he has a really nice run and then they can trade him for as much as they can get for him. But at the same time, like, I don't know, I have a bit of an optimistic side on him where I could see if he gets on a contender and they're going to want to play him fairly regularly down the stretch, and he's just been playing so well when he's been playing that I could see him being really valuable in the second half if he can just get past these nagging issues enough to play, as you said, five games a week.
Right. And, look, I think one of the things with a guy like that, I think he's not aged and decrepit now. Now, that's, of course, I'm 41, and when I say that about a baseball player, I mean like 36. So, that's dangerous kind of way. But my point is, he's not a guy who's so old in baseball years that you just don't ever think he's going to be healthy. And so, you know, I think guys get to a certain age and they start developing some sense and sort of having a better ability to sort of protect themselves. So I do kind of feel better about a guy dealing with nagging stuff at 32 than a guy dealing with nagging stuff at 25, 26. I just think you get some sanity and sense as far as how to manage that.
No, that could be quite true. And and maybe they're just kind of playing the long game on this and saying, you know, yeah, we're not going to burn out a valuable player and a valuable trade chip by having him play every game in late May and early June. I just like to see him. The stretches where he's missing four games, five games in a row are concerning, but hopefully we're past that now.
Yeah. Adam Duvall, a guy who really has always had power. He hit 27 homers in the PCL at age 25. He hit a combined 30 homers last year. He hit 30 in the Cal League. I mean, this is a guy who has always hit for power, hasn't really gotten the opportunity. He's now getting the opportunity, and he's doing probably on the high side of what you would have expected, but he's doing kind of what you thought he could do. And you look at his May 11 homers in 28 games. The Reds have no reason not to let this guy keep playing, keep swinging, keep seeing what he can do. To what extent are you buying this? I mean, I don't think we think he's going to hit 11 home runs every month, but do you think Duvall is a legitimate 30-plus home run guy in the big leagues?
Yeah, I think he can be a 30-plus home run guy. It's whether he'll hit – he's hitting .256 right now. It's whether he can keep that batting average high enough, because he is striking out a lot. So it's whether he can keep that batting average high enough to keep himself in the lineup so that he can hit the 30 home runs. He might end up being the cheapest source of 30 homers in a fantasy league this year, as far as – you know, he was on waivers in the majority of leagues just a few weeks ago. It's just with the strikeout rate, whether he's hitting – if at 250 he's in the lineup, at 215 then he may not be. As I agree with your perspective on him as a member of the Reds. Like, with that home park and the way they're rebuilding, they should just let him play every day and swing for the fences and find his way along and then evaluate him later this season and see if they do have, you know, a regular playing going forward from him. So – forgetting his long-term value beyond 2016, I think as fantasy owners, I think he's someone you want to own if you need power.
Byron Buxton is back again and just tore up AAA while he was down. I still don't entirely know what to make of him, but I think I'm interested. I think I'm willing to have him not succeed one more time if he's out there. Because there's so much that he's capable of doing, and again, his last time down, he was so good in AAA. And the other thing is, if he does start hitting, he's going to stay. This is not a guy that's going to get hot and they're going to send down.
No, yeah, I totally agree with you. You know, since he's been back, 2-1-for-4 games, 3 strikeouts, so nothing really to get us excited yet. I think maybe our expectations are more manageable now for him, so... fantasy owners, like when he came up last year, were thinking, okay, this guy's a savior. Get him in my lineup. He's going to steal 20 bases in the second half of the year. Now I think the expectations are probably more where they should be for a young player like him, which is pick him up and put him on your bench. And that's it. And, you know, put him on your bench and let's see where it goes from here. He shouldn't be someone that fantasy owners are ignoring. Like, I think that's the big takeaway, like with his skill set and limited opportunities. He's not someone we should be ignoring because he struggled last season and this season. But I don't think you can put him in your lineup right now.
No, I think that makes sense, but I don't know that he'd need to do a lot for me to put him in there, just because it hasn't been that long since we were all really high on him.
Yeah, no, that's totally true, and I'd like to see him. One of the big keys I'll want to see, and he'll have to earn his way to do this probably, is for the Twins to put him higher in the lineup. He's been hitting ninth, and I get why he's hitting ninth. He probably should be hitting ninth for now. I'd love to see him put together some multi-hit games and get higher in the lineup, because I feel like with his skill set, he's not going to hit in the middle of the lineup, so he's either at the top or the bottom.
Yep. There is basically nothing to like about the numbers Mark Teixeira has put up so far. 185, 3 homers. I mean, I guess he's walking some, but that doesn't help you any in fantasy. He is striking out even more than we're used to. You know, Teixeira, when he was good, was a strikeout every 4 to 5 plate appearances, 5 even to 6 plate appearances kind of guy. He's striking out 30% of his plate appearances. You have any buy low interest in him?
Not much. And in one of my leagues, another owner kind of floated in a non-direct way the possibility of me trading Joe Mauer for him yesterday, and I didn't bite. So I guess that's my – and I don't have a lot of optimism that Joe Mauer is going to hit for the power that he's hit for in the past week, you know, going forward. I think that was a bit of an aberration. So, I mean, if I wanted to buy low on Mark Teixeira, like trading Joe Mauer for him is the kind of trade I should be doing. He hit 31 home runs last year. So, and I haven't taken him on that, although I must say it still sits in the back of my mind. Like, do you feel like that's the kind of buy low someone should be looking for, like that he could be a power hitter this summer?
I would be extremely hesitant to do anything more than in a shallow league, pick him up off waivers and have him on my bench. Like I said, there is just really not much to like there. I think, one of the things that really stands out to me is for a power guy, Teixeira was never an extreme strikeout guy. He was never one of those strikeout 160, 170 times. You know, the year he had 120-some strikeouts, he had 700 plate appearances. So that's not really the kind of guy he was, and now he is striking out a ton. He is not walking that much to make up for it. He's not hitting for any power. I just don't know what there is to like.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's why I didn't take the buy. It's hard to believe that a guy who hit 31 home runs last year is sitting there for that small of a price in a trade in a deep league. But I'm just not finding the reasons to pick him up. And then if you look at, like, for most leagues that use batting average, he hit .255 last year, which is good. But the year before that, he hit .216.
Yeah.
Like, there's a long way for him to be helpful. I just feel like there's other, and first base is a position loaded with power hitters. Like, I'd just rather chase a different power hitter than him right now.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. We move on to starting pitchers. You had an interesting question here, and we are way, way, way ahead, but I think it's still worth asking. Is Clayton Kershaw a number one overall option in 2017?
Yeah, I think he totally is. I mean, he was an option this year, but not in most, you know, roto leagues. He wasn't picked first overall. But, I mean, I just feel like every year we have the same discussion. And when I say we, I mean, like, all the fantasy, you know, experts out there where you say you don't need to pick Kershaw first overall because there are a lot of good pitchers. And then every year by this point in the season, Kershaw's just putting up these amazing numbers. And you think back and you say, and if anyone who has a bust pick in the first round thinks, well, why didn't I just take Kershaw? He's always really good. And he keeps getting better. I just don't see how he can't be strongly considered along with, say, Trout and Harper to go first next season. If you were drafting a 2017 team right now, like, would you take Kershaw first?
I don't know. I just still feel like there's so much you don't know about. And it's not the performance. I would be very confident that he is going to be great again. It's just, you know, the guy who owns Clayton Kershaw's team put it as well as anybody can: pitchers break. And I don't believe he will, but it would be really hard for me to say right now, 10 months out, that I am more confident that he will not only be great but also be there than, for example, Mike Trout.
Yeah, so if we get to next March when you're drafting and he's been totally fine, let's say Kershaw has for the rest of this season and through spring training, then do you feel like he's a greater risk to miss significant time than someone like Trout during the season?
He is, but it gets a lot closer. If I'm redrafting today for the last 4 months of the season, or if we are in March and he's still healthy and he's coming off another year of a one something ERA, then yeah, I think that gets to be closer every year, and those worries become much less. It's that combination, when you just phrase it like that, it's that combination of the risk next year plus what we don't know over the next 10 months. I would be hesitant to take anybody but Trout, honestly, and that includes Harper, just because we just don't know if we're talking about I'm drafting today for a team that's going to play in 2017.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And I'll also, one point in favor of Kershaw that I want to mention is we've seen a lot of aces let their fantasy owners down to this point in the season. Like, there are a lot of people out there who have been left holding the bag, at least for some of the time, if not all the time so far, on David Price, Chris Archer, you know, Matt Harvey, Dallas Keuchel, Sonny Gray. Like, not all aces, but one and twos. When you look back, like, owners would have been better to just, like, it makes the theory of taking Kershaw and then, like, five hitters seem like a pretty safe plan, maybe. I know you're banking that a lot on Kershaw to stay healthy, but with so many other aces letting their owners down to some degree, and this is a guy who just had, like, for the last few years, just has never let anyone down.
Yeah. Matt Harvey, I like him so much. I am such a believer, and he looked so good. I know the White Sox haven't hit much, but you just look at what he did. I am pretty close to all the way back on board based on just one start. Do you think I'm crazy, or are you there too?
I'm not there, but I don't think you're crazy, and I'm not there. I guess is it fair to say both?
Right.
I was thinking about this before we started, and I thought, let's go back to our old standby, John Lester. if you owned Matt Harvey, would you trade him today for John Lester? Because I think in almost every league 2 weeks ago or 10 days ago, the owner would have been happy to trade Matt Harvey for John Lester.
I probably would, but it would be really tough. And here's the other thing, and this is, you know, you start talking about, we get into individual circumstances. Here's the thing with Harvey. If you have ridden him out this far, I'm probably holding on to him. I think in a vacuum, if you're just, you know, which of those two guys are you picking for the rest of the year and that kind of question, it's really tough. But if you've got Harvey and you've stuck through all of this and you just saw that start, it'd be awfully tough to pull the trigger on a deal for anything, any kind of challenge trade right now if you're just now believing that you might be about to get the good stuff. Because Harvey's upside for the remainder of the year is higher than Lester's, and I'm not sure it's particularly close as to what Harvey could do. If he's right, what he could be for the rest of the year is better than what Lester could be for the rest of the year.
Yeah, no, I understand that. You're right. If someone who's used Harvey for all his starts and was counting him to be their ace is probably in the bottom half of their league in ERA and WHIP, and Harvey is probably their best option as far as anything they could get from on the trade market to get like a low twos ERA, sub one WHIP for the rest of the season, and then rise up in that category. That being said, like, where I'm at, I would trade him for Lester every time. And to me, Lester's just—I always use him because he's kind of my poster boy for a really solid number two mixed league starter, but not an ace. I would probably make that trade right now. And I think the discussion we're having puts a good picture that, you know, Harvey owners can choose to probably go either way. If they look around the league, if they want to get out right now, this is the time, and they can probably get a Lester type from one of their other owners, or they can stay all in. And I think either option has merit.
I was very close to picking up Matt Shoemaker in a daily transaction league before his start last night. It's clear that I should have, although he didn't get a win. He's been just dominant these last few starts. Last three starts, 31 strikeouts and no walks. And the thing that is appealing about him to me, I think, is that there seems to be a reason. Look, I've done this. I've done the beat work, and the guy has three great starts, and you say why, and he doesn't want to tell you, I don't know. So he comes up with something and says, well, you know, I've been throwing a splitter. But it seems like maybe that's actually true. It seems like maybe there's really something to this, that he has incorporated this devastating splitter into his array, and it has shown some pretty spectacular results. I think if he's still there for his next start, I got to pick him up. And I think if I pick him up, I'm thinking about holding on to him.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's a two-start pitcher next week. And the first start's in Yankee Stadium, which isn't really a great place for a fly ball pitcher like Shoemaker. But the Yankees haven't been great on offense this year. I would totally use him anyways. He's just so hot right now. And, I mean, there could be – you're right. The splitter, it gives us good reason for optimism. Plus, he was really, really good in 2014. He does tend to go good or bad and not much in the middle. So that makes me have some pause on him. And then there's also just that general, you know, cat and mouse game with hitters where, you know, he's introduced something now and then there's going to be an adjustment period and hitters are going to be, you know, reviewing that and trying to figure out a way to get to work past that. And so I don't know what kind of level of success he'll continue once. Will they catch on a little bit to the splitter that he's throwing? I don't know. But he has to be owned in every league right now.
Excuse me. What did you think of Eduardo Rodriguez?
I thought he looked pretty good. I think he looked good enough that, you know, I would want to pick him up in probably a 10-team mixed league, especially because he has the Red Sox lineup behind him. Would you pick him up now? Would you pick him up or Shoemaker?
I'd probably pick up Shoemaker, but that's largely because if you're picking up somebody right now, you're thinking more about one or two starts 1 week than about the rest of the year. If I had to hold them both for the rest of the year, it's a closer call. I do think, you know, one thing we talked about last week with Rodriguez is if you have him, you might hold off to activate him. I don't think that's a question anymore. I think if you've got him, you're activating him going forward.
Yeah, for sure, especially while the Red Sox are playing so well right now. So, I mean, he could have a six-inning, three-run start and still come out with a win. So, yeah, I would activate him right now. And, yeah, he is definitely someone that mixed league owners should be picking up.
We talked about Yu Darvish last week. He pitched quite well against a good team in his first start. Does it change anything for you? Not that you were down on him, but does it give you a boost in belief in him, or does one start not really change fundamentally your kind of assessment of him?
I felt like I was on the high end of believers before he came back, so for me this was just kind of reassurance, you know, that I felt like I was on the right track with him. I think he's a borderline ace for the rest of the season. Maybe I was going to compare him to Jose Fernandez. I'm not going to go that high, but when I was thinking Fernandez, I was thinking maybe because Fernandez doesn't always go really deep in the games, he'll be on an innings limit, things like that, where you might not get the volume. With Darvish, I don't think you get the volume, but he can make six-inning starts and start and strike out seven or eight batters and get you more strikeouts than even some aces do in their seven-inning starts. So, you know, I'm pretty high on him. Like, the strikeout potential is just so high with him.
Yep. We move to the bullpen, and there has been some movement in a couple of places this week. Brad Boxberger activated and then right back on the DL. I don't know that that really changes anything from where we were a week ago, because I think that, I mean, obviously if you have him, you're DLing him, but it was kind of uncertain, and I sure hadn't dropped Colomé, who's been outstanding, and the Rays were kind of making noises that while Boxberger would return to the ninth, it might not be from day one.
Yeah, I mean, and this is probably a good, you know, reminder for fantasy owners not to get too far ahead. I'll see sometimes people ask us questions on Twitter saying, you know, I have Colomé and Boxberger's back in a week or two. Should I drop him now? Or should I trade him away for very little right now? And, you know, you just never know what's going to happen. So it's a good reminder for fantasy owners, like stick with Colomé, keep him on, even if some of them benched him for the week or something, but keep him till you see how the whole situation plays out. It's really frustrating for Boxberger owners who have been counting on him. I'm one of them in one of my leagues where, like, I budgeted into a plan of getting him for saves for about 3.5 or 4 months of the season, and that's just not going to happen now.
And that actually, you just directly set up another topic here, which is kind of a somewhat parallel situation with the Brewers, where there are some noises being made about how Will Smith could slide back in. That could be the job share arrangement that they talked about before the season started. But I think the lesson here, tell me if you disagree, is if you've got Jeffress, don't change a thing unless you get a really good offer, correct?
Yeah, I agree with that. The Brewers were pretty, forthcoming, saying that they would be fine with Smith getting some save chances and that they haven't backed off of that, you know, plan that they talked about prior to the season. That being said, Jeffress has pitched pretty well. And I feel like if Smith does get some save chances, I don't anticipate it being like a 50-50 split. I still feel like Jeffress gets more chances. And you're right, like the Boxberger situation shows us, you know, Smith could be back on the DL in a week or two, or Smith could come back and have rough outings, and then they back way off on that, and Jeffress just keeps rolling along. So, yeah, to me, it doesn't downgrade Jeffress more than 5 or 10%.
We move on to the injuries, and one in your backyard, Troy Tulowitzki, was really struggling. He's now on the DL. There really has not been a lot to like with Tulowitzki, frankly, since the trade. And the injury he came down with late last year, I think it's easy to say he had a winter and he's rested and he's good, but I also think it's fair to wonder how close to right he ever was this year. Not that he was hobbled, but I think it's fair to wonder how close to right he's been all along. Any chance you're probably holding on to one a DL slot, but any chance you're dropping Tulowitzki in some leagues?
Yeah, I do think, okay, so I probably wouldn't drop him just because I could probably trade him. There's probably someone in my league that doesn't have a very good shortstop who would give me something better than what I could get on waivers, but I can't say that it's 100% that I would never drop him. If I was in a really shallow league, and some leagues don't have middle infield spots, and I had another shortstop on my team who was quite productive, you know, so I'm talking about using him in a utility spot or something, like his numbers have to improve by a lot to be, you know, a good utility asset in a shallow league. So I can't say that it's something I would completely rule out, which is just really hard to believe when we're talking about Troy Tulowitzki and not a Troy Tulowitzki who's 37 years old or something like that. Who would have thought that a major league team would ever say right now that they are happier with the offensive production they're getting from Darwin Barney while Troy Tulowitzki's on the disabled list than what they were getting from him? And that's what's happening in Toronto.
This is maybe a ridiculous question, but do you have any concern about, let's say, when Tulowitzki comes back, do you have any concern that he's not a full-on everyday player. Not that he would go to the bench, but that he might not be a six-games-a-week player when he comes back.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, this is one of the most injury-prone players in baseball. It's somebody who's moving into his 30s and plays a physically demanding position. And, you know, if the Blue Jays said, yeah, we're going to give him a day off a week just to preserve him, even if that's whether they mean that way or not, but that could be their plan. And we're also talking about someone who probably has one of the highest likelihoods of any player of going back on the disabled list at some point, you know, once he returns the rest of the way. And that has to factor in for fantasy owners. So, yeah, I all along was not really a buy low guy on Tulo when he was struggling at the start of the year. And now I feel like, yeah, I feel like his owners maybe should be looking to get out of that if they can sell him on the name value.
How optimistic are you that Sonny Gray, who is on his way back, is going to be the guy we're used to seeing when he gets back?
Yeah, I'm a little optimistic. I think I'm maybe Sonny Gray's my Matt Harvey for you a little bit. Like, I don't think he's going to pitch as well as Matt Harvey could, or as you are hoping Matt Harvey will, but I think I'm a little bit on the same line of thinking with Sonny Gray, where I feel like if you own him, you've used him, he kind of torched your ratios, but he's a pretty talented pitcher, and they seem to have found an issue and feel like they've moved past it. So I wouldn't want to sell low on Sonny Gray unless I got a real, you know, unless it was just a little bit low. I wouldn't sell low on him if it was a major discount.
Are you going to be on the other side of that equation then?
Would I buy low? Yeah, I probably would. I own Sonny Gray in one league, and someone offered me Marco Estrada for him, and I really like Estrada, and I believe in him, and I didn't take the trade. That would be the kind of deal I would be looking to make probably in the other direction. If I had a pitcher who was pitching pretty well so far this year but maybe doesn't have great potential, that's the kind of I'd be interested in. I does, and we talked about this earlier, you know, today, that it is a little league-dependent, and, you know, do you need to roll the dice on a Sonny Gray and trade him by low on him, or are you fine with what your pitching staff's at right now? But I don't know why, but I'm a little optimistic on him.
We move to the two-start pitchers, and definitely a couple interesting names on here. Robbie Ray, Williams Perez, Tyler Chatwood, Michael Fulmer, Colby Lewis, Adam Conley, Zach Davies, and Matt Shoemaker. You know, we talked some about Shoemaker, but I think he's really high on that list for me. Neither of those at the Yankees and home against Cleveland. That's a pretty good couple of matchups, even as scary as Yankee Stadium can be. I like Fulmer a lot, but Toronto and at Yankee Stadium is a little less of a good matchup. But those two guys are probably at the top of my list, and along with maybe Conley at Minnesota, at Arizona. Who do you like from that list?
Yeah, I agree with you that Fulmer and Shoemaker, to me, are must-starts in all leagues. The other ones that kind of interested me, Colby Lewis has been surprisingly effective so far this year, and he has stretches like where he can be pretty effective. He's got a nice offense behind him. He's going to face the Astros, who lead the majors in strikeouts. Then he's going to go pitch in Seattle. You know, good. That's a good lineup, but it's a pitcher-friendly park. Like, he could survive that. Like, to me, he's an option, like, in a 12-team league. And Tyler Chatwood is one who I just can't quite figure out what to do with. But in a 15-team league, I think I would use him next week. He's pitched pretty well this year. I could see him doing fine at Dodger Stadium. And then, you know, the start at Coors, every start at Coors is scary, but it's against the Padres. I mean, that's as good as it's going to get for him. I think I would use him.
I mean, I think if you're ever going to use him, that's the kind of week where you'd probably use him, unless you stumble into some, you know, at Arizona and, I don't know, at Seattle kind of week. Excuse me, at San Diego and at Seattle kind of week or something.
Yeah, I think, and we've talked about this before, I think if you own Tyler Chatwood, you have to use him next week, because if you won't use him next week, you might as well drop him, because there probably won't be another week where you want to use him. Davies is a little bit interesting to me, too, in the sense of I had totally written him off, but he, as far as like immediate help, not forever, but immediate help. And then he was great against the Cardinals in his last start and had some decent starts before that. So, you know, I think in a deep mix league, again, you have to at least consider him for a two-start week.
I think that's fair. Fred Zinke, thanks for taking some time to talk. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And this is the Fantasy 411.